But didn't I hear a rumor, one of those official rumors, maybe that like they were hoping it'd be on the ballot this fall? Did I hear that somewhere?
Well, yes, and there's people in hell hoping they'll get ice water, too. It's not going to be on the ballot. Let me tell you why I think it's not going to be on the ballot this fall, okay? And I think it's going to go between the insurance fight, the lawyers, and the business groups up there at the Capitol. I think this issue is going to get caught in between that. I think that the legislature is going to start fighting about that, that it's going to affect this issue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Louisiana Farm Bureau podcast. I'm Carl Wiggers, joined by Avery Davidson and Joe Mapes. And today we're talking all things the Louisiana legislature. And Joe, I know it's been a busy time, crazy time in the world of Louisiana politics. Like it's been going on for, session's been going on for a minute. But let's first start with a lot of new faces. Since we've talked last, there's a new governor in the governor's mansion. There's new legislators from all corners of the state and new statewide elected officials. What's going on here in Baton Rouge? Kind of let's start with the governor. What's that been like his first few months in office?
This has been a strong governor. As you know, he came in the primary with no second primary, you know, challenge or runoff. He's come in with a forceful hand on his agenda. In the first session that we had, special session, it was part congressional, closed primaries and part congressional redistricting, okay? That went fairly well for him. He got a little pushback from some senators, a couple of them, but not much. Then he had the second session, which was law enforcement. I think he had 17 bills, if memory serves, and those went through no problem. That session, I think, was a little bit longer than the first session. And then we went into the third session, which is the regular legislative session, and that's 85 days long.
Right.
That's where we are right now. And then there's rumor that we're going to stop this early, this session, and go into a special session with a constitutional convention.
Yeah, that's the last thing I wanted to talk to you about today, and we're skipping straight to it, but I'm not going to let you.
No, we won't do
I'm
that.
I'm not going to let you. But I wanted to ask you about, you know, he's come in, we've had these extraordinary sessions. One of them being around law enforcement. He was the attorney general before he had the governor's mansion.
Highest law enforcement officer in the land for 8 years.
That was not really a surprise. We know he's got a lot of, had a lot of agenda items that he wanted to make a priority really quickly. Tell us about who our governor is. What is he about? What are some of these things that we'll see in his governorship, you know, from his leadership?
Well, you know, every governor since 1976 has been a reform governor in Louisiana, okay? So we're in a position where this governor is a reform governor, whether he says that or not. And I believe that he earnestly believes he's a reform governor. That being said, we've had 8 years of a Democratic regime, and now we're going to have 4 years of Republicanism. But it's not going to just come from him as the state's strongest Republican. And he came in strong, like I said earlier, but you got a supermajority in both the House and the Senate. And it seems like the perfect environment until you realize that nothing's perfect. And so that when, you know, Jeff Landry walked out on that inaugural carpet out of the state capitol down those stairs, he was at the height of his power, you know? And so there's been little chinks, not very many yet, but I'm going to predict that with Lobby, the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, wanting to push tort reform, wanting to push a constitutional convention, and I think they're going to get into a dune boggle over that issue, over the insurance reform issue between the governor and the business community.
And let's talk about another new face there, Tim Temple. He ended up running unopposed for commissioner of insurance. What seems to be his agenda, and how strong is he coming into this?
It's a difficult environment, okay? His agenda right now with legislation is to improve the department policies and improve situations for the policyholders. One example for the policyholders, we're the only state in America that has a law that says if you've been with your insurance company for 3 years, you're married to them and they're married to you, they can't fire you. So if you become a great risk, you've had 20, 30 wrecks, if it's after 3 years, they can't divorce from you, okay? It's an insane law. We've got a bill to repeal that law, and that's part of the commissioner's legislative package. And I think that's the biggest one. They've got a couple of other bills in his package. They're all, like I said, policy and insurance reform, and they're not necessarily tort reform. That's the big one where you get into fight with the lawyers, where they're making all the money. And there's a bill that's filed by the chairman of insurance in Senate, Kirk Talbot, to repeal collateral source from the law. And collateral source is where lawyers that work with doctors on inflated bills, and that comes back to all of us in the form of higher insurance rates, much higher. And so if we could remove that one provision from the law with this bill, it'd be something.
Yeah, so like the bill being for $25,000, but the insurance payment, or not the insurance payment, but the actual payment the medical facility accepted would be about $5,000, and say that that bill was paid. However, when it goes before the court, the $25,000 is what is shown to the jury, and therefore the award includes that $25,000, which then comes out of whatever the insurance company is paying for that, which then goes back to us, the policyholders, to pay in our premiums. Am I reading all that correctly?
100% correct. And it's a great point because it segues into the point that no expenses can be presented to the jury in a trial in relation to collateral source. So they have to consider a number. So if the number is $2 million, okay, they can't consider any itemized expense and say, well, they paid $15 for a Tylenol here. Maybe they should have only paid $5 for a Tylenol pill, okay? They can't make those decisions on their own. They don't know what they're voting on, basically. They're just voting on a dollar amount. And what they're told by the attorneys is hate the insurance company. They're the evil ones. So the bigger the dollar amount, the better the settlement for everybody. And the current insurance commissioner is getting in a lot of trouble in the media and publicly because he said this. He said, call your insurance company first. And the trial lawyers are extremely angry at him for saying that. Now, when I was a child, you could get your license in Louisiana at age 15. I shouldn't admit this on public record, but between 15 and 18, I got in 16 different wrecks, okay?
Bless America.
I have a lot of experience with wrecks. I used to drive fast, okay? Grand Torinos and shit like that. I'm sorry?
Is that why Sandy drives now?
Not yet. We're not there yet. But every time my mother and father would be mad at me, but they'd tell me the same thing. Without fail, call your insurance company, okay? We never even considered a lawyer. We never heard of lawyers back then, okay? And this ain't the good old days or anything. The lawyers just figured it out. Mm-hmm. Advertise, okay? And advertise. And then when you run out of money, go borrow some money, advertise some more. And that's not a joke. I know a guy who owns a medical clinic who told me that. He said they figured it out and they told each other, if you got to borrow money because you're broke, to keep advertising, it'll pay off. Now, just go ask Gordon McKernan if that's true or not.
Well, we're talking insurance. We kind of jumped off the governor real quick.
Yeah.
But are there any other statewide new faces in the statewide landscape
certainly
something we need to be paying attention to and knowing about here in Farm Bureau?
Yeah, you got Dr. John Fleming is the, Nancy Landry is state representative. She's the new Secretary of State. Billy Nungesser went back in as lieutenant governor. Got new governors, Jeff Landry. John Fleming is the
state treasurer. Yeah, he was a congressman in the district that is now held by Mike Johnson. Congressman John Fleming was there, Dr. John Fleming, and now he's state treasurer John Fleming. And then Liz Merle.
Yeah,
she was the solicitor general under Jeff Landry, and she just pretty much moved up one rung on the ladder. Now she's the attorney general.
Right. And these are all people that we've known for years, Carl, and they know about Farm Bureau and they know agriculture. So like we were just telling the young farmers and the ranchers at the Capitol, at some point in the process, we as members, even lobbyists, we lose our voice because we can't get behind certain microphones. We can't get across certain rails on the Senate and the House floor. So we need somebody that's as knowledgeable and articulate about agriculture in rural Louisiana as we are, so that when they get down there, they can relay our message and influence people.
Gotcha. Well, you mentioned the young farmers. We've talked about, you mentioned the two sessions and now the regular session that we're in. Today, you were part, you kind of led a bunch of Louisiana Farm Bureau young farmers and ranchers around the Capitol, giving them the tour. It's the normal Capitol Day we do every year, but it's a big deal for those young farmers and ranchers to come down, leave their farms for a day, and come and walk those halls, sit in those committee rooms. What was their visit like today?
Well, fortunately, the weather was nice, but it was still wet back home, so they couldn't, work, so they were able to come. So we had a nice group, we were able to let them seek some committees. We went into a natural resources committee where they were talking. They have a new legislator, and she's got a resolution to deal with animals, hurt animals. She was the attorney. She is the attorney for the Humane Society. And so it was an interesting conversation for them, but we had to get up and leave because it was time to go to lunch right when things were starting to get really interesting. So they really enjoyed that. But we were able to introduce them. We heard about a piece of legislation that was going to be filed by a legislator that could be of concern to agriculture in regard to adding livestock to the liability laws, personal liability laws in the state. Well, we actually went outside the committee room where he was, stood out there. Sandy went inside and got the rep and asked him to come out and talk to us. And so one of our young farmers and ranchers, nobody wanted to, he says, y'all got any questions? And I wanted them to ask the question, what about your bill? And so I'm looking at all of them. When this young lady finally asked him, okay, and he explained the bill completely backwards and said it did the opposite of what it did. And when he walked off, they go, wait a minute. And I go, here's what happened. Okay, we have all new legislators. You're talking about new people, Carl. One thing that we have to really consider is the staff's all new too, because if you have these term limits and these big groups of legislative bodies that leave, staff leaves with them, okay? And the new staff doesn't know what they're doing. So I will defend this legislator by saying staff screwed his bill up. But it was an interesting process for them to go through and see how things like that are possible, you know?
Well, I mean, everybody that works in that big pointy building is still human too. Yeah. So I think that's one of the valuable things of taking groups of farmers that don't work in that building that can see that process and understand and learn about it.
And what's it like for you whenever you see a group of young farmers and ranchers, you know, 18 to 35, and they go and they see the process for the first time, and then you see one of them get that courage, get the spirit enough up to ask a question of their legislator?
I don't know if you play golf, but it's like connecting with a golf ball, okay? If you do it one time out on the golf course, you're coming back because you get that feeling in your gut. You're like, good Lord, that's what was supposed to happen. When a person participates, that's how I feel.
Yeah,
I feel like, yes, because that's my strongest club in the bag is the Farm Bureau membership.
Mm, that's great. And that's one of the things that's, I know the legislators have to love it too, right? Like,
oh my God,
getting to interact with.
I have a witness sitting next to me. He's not in this podcast. He was with me, a client of mine, shadowing me at the Capitol, and he will attest to that. We had to peel these legislators away from the crowds. They had places to go, lunch, other committee hearings, and we had to cut them off. Say, that's enough. Thanks for coming. We had Francis Thompson come, Rodney Shammerhorn, who else? Talked to us.
Troy Romero.
Larry
sure came
Bagley.
By at some point.
Troy Romero talked to the Ag Committee Chairman. Troy Romero talked to us for a long time. So yeah, we were just taking places in the hall, different parts of the halls, having conversations, and it was great. And then Jack McFarland spoke to us. He's former chairman of the Ag Committee, but he's now chairman of the Appropriations Committee. He's got a bill up on the House floor today called Direct Action. So right now, if you get sued, okay, your insurance company, Farm Bureau, is listed on the lawsuit. So people, the lawyers or the other people suing you, they go, wow, look, that's dollar signs. State Farm, Allstate, Farm Bureau, whatever, okay? Direct action says, no, you can't list the insurance company on the lawsuit. Okay, think about this. You get in a wreck, what does it matter? What does the fact that you do or do not have insurance have to do with you getting in a wreck?
Absolutely nothing.
Right, you've got a responsibility. So we don't need trial lawyers and people looking at logos and brands and saying, you know, we can sue for, and look, you go look Farm Bureau up and you see what their policy limits are. So you immediately sue for policy limits, you know, but if you don't know who the insurance company is or if they even have insurance, then you don't know the policy limits and the suits are not going to be as high.
And it's not just that. I mean, you're getting it back to people at that point. It is Joe Mapes suing Avery Davidson for some civil issue. And it doesn't, I'm the one paying for the insurance. Okay. So that doesn't matter. That's not privy to this. Now, it's mandated by the state of Louisiana that if I'm going to drive a car lawfully on the road, I must have insurance of some form. Again, that's between Avery Davidson and the state of Louisiana. But whenever I hit your big old truck from the side the other day, well, that's Avery Davidson messing up Joe Mapes' stuff. And so that lawsuit should be between us. It doesn't matter who I have insurance with. And it's not something that should be a part of what a jury considers, right? My humble opinion.
So, Carl, back to the young farmers and ranchers and their day at the Capitol. On that particular piece of legislation, Jack McFarland, the author, was talking to us downstairs. I brought him back upstairs, and they had to leave because it was getting late in the afternoon after lunch. But we showed them, each one of them, who their constituent state representative is. They wrote a personal note to them in the back of the house from them as a farmer, but from young farmers and ranchers, because they all know who they are, and said, please help pass this direct action bill. So this was an immersive experience for them that they actually got to help do grassroots lobbying.
They didn't just walk the halls, see a committee room.
Have a lunch.
Yeah, they actually got to participate, which is what you always love to push.
Because if you're not at the table, you're on the menu, right? And I told them, I said, look, y'all could actually help later. It could be that this bill is written properly on the liability for the livestock. And if it is, we're against it, and we're going to need y'all to help. So y'all need to join. You need to read the Daily Voice first, because we're going to be talking about the issues in the Daily Voice. And then you can act on the issues in Voter Voice if you sign up at the bottom of the website for both of those services, right?
That's a valuable part. And that's one thing that I know since you and I started doing the video series, Grassroots Government, probably, I don't know what, 6 years ago now, probably.
Yeah.
That was one of the things. There was always a call to action of some sort, and that was get involved or be ready to get involved, because that when we do have to call on our membership, you've been around the Capitol for a minute, so you.
I'm in my 50th. I'm in 50, brother.
You're old.
50. Nah, I started young.
Started when you were 7, right?
I started when I was 12. I lobbied Senator Leonard Schaubear outside Senate Committee Room AB, and then his two sons served in his Senate seat after that, and I lobbied them too.
As much experience as you have, I'm not gonna say nothing. You're much weaker without that Farm Bureau member, like you just said earlier.
I'm nothing.
I didn't want to say that.
I am nothing without that Farm Bureau membership. If I walk into that Capitol with my good looks and charm and say, I want to change the laws effectively, you know, that's going to go a long way, but it's not going to.
They're going to change the rules for the Capitol and say, guys who look like you can't come in.
Can't come in at all. That's right. Yeah.
That's where the power is, and that's what 100% we get 100% to see from our perspective at Farm Bureau.
Yeah, I mean it's almost like punching below the belt. Okay, and I'm not joking about this. I can tell you that there have been plenty of legislators, when they find out that we're going to call their constituents, they get extremely angry at us. But that's what grassroots politics is.
I was about to say, Joe, how many representatives do you have at the state legislature? You personally.
One.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have one for each person there has one. And then each person also has a senator. So if you can get someone who can actually vote for that representative or senator, that goes a long way. Joe Mapes alone can't get Stuart Cathy to change anything. Can't get, I'm going to throw another name out.
Right,
you know, throw any name out there.
If Stuart Cathy sees a Farm Bureau label above my head when I walk in the room, now it's not me.
Right.
Okay. It is Farm Bureau.
140,000+ members.
That's right. And so when people try to, I'll give you a perfect example. When people try to make this personal up at the Capitol, somebody hollered at me one time and said, you know, you're wrong. And I said, and there's a big group of people. And I told them, I said, how can I be wrong when I'm the voice of the farmer? They're telling me that they're scared. They're telling me that they're concerned. They could be wrong, and maybe you need to educate them. But at this point, I'm not wrong for telling you how they feel and what they think, you know? So that's the distinction you got to make up there, that it's not personal. It's all about winning. And if you're in somebody's way, they just want to get you out of their way so they can win. Nothing personal.
Well, let's talk about something else. We hinted at it a minute ago, but Constitutional Convention, I know that's a big issue, and I think it's safe to say it's one of the things on the governor's list of things he would like to win and have and see happen. Am I right in that?
We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Because, I mean, he's definitely spoken about it, but it comes more from the business community. This has been a lifelong bucket list item of, you know, certain segments of the business community and you know. That's where it's predominantly coming from.
Okay. I am the uneducated one here at the table, so.
Well, that's usually the case,
that's
Carl.
That's pretty much always the case.
No.
But let's talk about it. What is it even, where is the talk coming from about a constitutional convention?
Okay, so for years, Farm Bureau and other business groups opposed the constitutional convention because we didn't feel like the legislature was qualified to get in there and treat, you know, our most precious document. And then about 12 years ago, somebody filed a bill that said, hey, why don't we have a limited constitutional convention? It'll be just on the financial aspects relating to the budget. Okay, so all of us, removed our opposition. I said, well, that's kind of good, you know, because we agree the financial aspects of the Constitution need to be cleaned up. But guess what? When we start actually pushing forward this year on one, we discover that we're limited as to what we can do, you know, getting into a constitutional convention.
Yeah, I think, as you put in your article, that if you open one subsection, well, you got to open the main section, which then opens up everything below. So now everything in that section becomes a part of the Constitutional Convention and can be changed.
Well, let me just back up a step from there. The Constitutional Convention, you talked about the most important document. A constitution is the most important document that the state has, that everything else is built from, and it's amended over and over and over again.
11 times since 1812.
Right.
It hasn't been amended. We actually have, we're on Constitution number 11.
Right, right. Well, right. I mean, yeah.
But
we've amended
it a lot more than that. We have to constantly work within the bounds of that constitution, which is just why it's there, but it kind of limits abilities, talking about financially, like it limits where you can and can't like get into issues.
And that's the whole reason they say they want to go into the Constitution, because right now we can only make cuts from education and healthcare, and everybody feels too guilty to keep making cuts to education and healthcare, and we shouldn't be making them there. But it was set up that way deliberately a long time ago. So what we need to do is take certain items out of the Constitution, financial items, put them into statute where we can manipulate them with a simple majority vote instead of a two-thirds vote. And then once we do that, we'll be able to, like I said, manage the finances more fluidly.
Yeah, I'm going to wax nerdetic here a little bit for one, if you really want to learn a good bit about the last constitution that was written in Louisiana in 1973, read The Last Constitution by Jeremy Alford.
Jeremy Alford, yeah.
That book is amazing and has a wonderful history. But on top of that, we went through 2 years of wrangling. We put people up in hotels here in Baton Rouge for months at a time. We turned the PMAC into a place where folks got together to discuss the issues of the Constitution, and it took 2 years. I mean, it was a long, arduous process, and that was under then Governor Edwin Edwards.
And they chose the delegates through a somewhat lengthy process, and they discussed the issues in advance. And that's what I think we need to do, is give this concept of a constitutional convention more careful thought up front, so that when the legislators go in, and not just legislators, you're going to have 39 members from the Senate be delegates. And that's all the Senate. There's 39 members in the Senate. You have 38 from the House out of 105 be delegates, and 27 from the private sector. Okay, if my math adds up, that's 104 people that probably never met each other and certainly never worked with each other in a group setting. Are they going to come to a consensus on a delicate, intricate, complicated document like the Constitution in 2 weeks? No.
Is that
when
what
it took 2 years?
Where
in
did 2 weeks come from? I was about to ask, what's the timeline? If
that's the
two
official
years?
Rumor. Okay, it's
rumor.
Well, yeah, there's nothing on paper so far. So, but you know, what's interesting is there's a rule that you can only have a 30-day max on a special session. Okay, but on a constitutional convention, it can be unlimited. And I would say at this point, it doesn't matter. You can put it 10 years, and it's not going to work out if they don't know what they're doing. You know. So again, 104 people coming to a consensus within 2 weeks. I wrote in the article, it'd be like trying to herd cats in a room full of rocking chairs, you know, and it truly would be. So if that's the case, we're going to a 2 week. And look, let me tell you why I know we're not going to go to only 2 weeks, because they're saying they're going to end the 2 week session, the regular session, early 2 weeks, and then go into a constitutional convention. That would mean they'd have to go home 2 weeks early. Go home to their families, and they don't want to do that. They ran to get away from their families. And so now they're up. So, no, I'm serious. Okay. They don't want to go. They'll add 2 weeks after this session, but they're not taking 2 weeks off. There's no way. And then think about this. They'll get per diem. The Constitution mandates per diem for a constitutional convention. They already get per diem as being a legislator for coming down for a related event. That'll be two per diems, and that'll be double dipping. That'll be interesting. It gets even more interesting, because to form a constitutional convention, the legislature has to pass a bill by a two-thirds vote. What does that mean? It means that bill is a constitutional amendment, okay? Well, constitutional amendments have to be filed 5 days prior to the regular session. And this one, either hasn't been filed yet or it's about to be filed or it just got filed. Doesn't matter. It didn't meet the requirement.
Interesting.
So it just, when you start to get in this conversation, it goes more and more like that, but it's all centered around we need more time. It's just that simple.
But didn't I hear a rumor, one of those official rumors maybe that like they were hoping it'd be on the ballot this fall? Did I hear that somewhere?
Well, yeah. Yes, and there's people in hell hoping they'll get ice water too. It's not going to be on the ballot. Let me tell you why I think it's not going to be on the ballot this fall, okay? And I think it's going to go between the insurance fight and the lawyers and business groups up there at the Capitol. I think that this issue is going to get caught in between that. I think that the legislature is going to start fighting about that it's going to affect this issue.
How is all of that talk going to affect issues that are already been filed, that are already bills that are already in session?
I think what, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Joe, I think what it's going to do is it's going to create a false rush. I think that it's going to make people feel that they have to rush some things along. It may push along things without being properly considered because they want things to be done before this quote unquote constitutional convention begins during the last 2 weeks of the regular session. But I also, I keep going back to all that it took for us to do this last constitution, CC 73. And I just don't see the, not just the need, but the will of the people to make it happen. And maybe it doesn't matter the will of the people in this case. And that's a strong thing to say.
But I don't think
the will of the people is there for it. Because, yeah, we complain about every time we have to go and vote for a constitutional amendment. I think we may have the most amended constitution in the country. We are tied for the number of constitutions that the state has had. Georgia is tied with us at 11. So apparently we like dealing with constitutional stuff here in Louisiana, but I don't think that you have the will of the people this go round. And hey, I could be 100% wrong, and I'm okay with that.
Well, if you had the will of the people would have had input on the constitution that's probably already been pre-written prior to any constitutional convention. Because if you're going to tell 104 people, we're fixing to pass an extremely complicated document in 2 weeks, don't you think that document's already written? You think, you know?
In speaking with Jeremy Alford, what he told me was that the idea behind this constitutional convention would be to only remove language, not to add.
But let's go back to what you just said earlier. When you open one main article, sub-article is open. So you can say that. You can say, okay, here's the rules. Okay.
We're just going to cut.
When everybody figures out, hey, I can go into any sub-article I want and pass any bill I want or offer any bill that I want, that's going to change everything.
And every now and then, a change of a word from may to shall, that can change a whole lot of things.
That will that could annihilate an industry. You could move a semicolon and change it to a period and it could change a law. It's that delegate. So you've got to have somebody like the chairman of agriculture, Troy Romero, who I talked to. I said, Troy, tag, you're it. If they talk about agriculture in a constitutional convention, you need to stand up and explain why this provision is in the Constitution, why it was put there originally, why it's needed, and thank you.
Troy Romero is one of those new faces that is in position there in the House Ag Committee, which is a great thing. He's a great friend of Farm Bureau, and it's nice to know that he will be the one to stand up and speak on Farm Bureau's behalf or on farmers' behalf.
Well, right. He's also an Ag Leadership alum, you know, just like you, like me, like Robert Allah, who's also now a state senator. I mean, all from Ag Leadership. So have a good understanding of what agriculture is like across the state and across commodities.
Mm-hmm. That's very important.
Troy is a former crawfisherman. He owns I think he sold it now, his turf business, which is, you know, agriculture related. And so he understands,
yeah. You
know, and that's important.
Well, Joe, I really am glad that you understand a lot of the stuff that's happening in that big building. Avery, I know you do as well. So I'm glad that some people have some knowledge that I don't, because this kind of hurts my head a little bit talking about all this and the names and dates that Avery's throwing around and the 11 constitutions that we have that I now know that we have. But anyways, I appreciate you spending some time with us talking about all the things that have been going on in the Capitol for the last few months.
I'm glad to have the opportunity.
And I'm really thankful that you're at the Capitol even when our young farmers are not. So on behalf of Avery Davis and Joe Mapes, I'm Carl Wiggers for the Louisiana Farm Bureau podcast. If you want to learn anything about some of the stuff we've talked about, Avery mentioned an article. I'll put links to that in the show notes. And we will also include a link to sign up for the Daily Voice, where you'll find anything that's happening in the Capitol. We'll make sure to keep you up to date there, and as well as Voter Voice you can sign up for. So when we need you, you can get involved. That's it for this episode. We'll see you again here next time on the Louisiana Farm Bureau podcast.